Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Writer's Lounge, show number 34, October 29th, 2012. I am your host. This is the Writer's Lounge, I was going to say. And co-host today, we have two females on. We have Robin Eduardo and Sandy. Yes, Robin Eduardo is in the eye of the storm out there in New Jersey. She's right on the coast, absorbing the full impact of Sandy as she moves on shore. So we'll be talking to her in a second. She's doing fine. She's safe. Don't worry, folks. She's not standing out there like some idiot reporters are on CNN. She's fine, although she did take some wonderful pictures earlier. But anyways, a brief intro to today's show. We will have on today Mick Ridgewell, and he wrote The Nightcrawler. It's a Halloween story that I hope you'll find interesting when you pick it up and read it. And the Writer's Lounge blog is over at timeridell.com/blog, and you can go over there and read all the reviews I've written. And while you're doing that, you can listen to each show. In the upper left-hand corner of the page, you'll find a Blog Talk Radio player, and just click the button there, and then you can listen to the show. Easy as that. Also, of course, we're on Facebook, and you can go there very easily over at the Blog Talk Radio site by clicking on the link. That'll take you right to the Facebook page. We are also on Twitter, so go over there and follow us and send us a couple tweets, if you will. Also, you can contact us at twl11@yahoo.com. You're sending in your emails to us. We've gotten several. We're getting flooded now because we've opened up our session, and I'll talk about that in a minute. Upcoming guest next time around, we will have on Brian D. Anderson with the Godling Chronicles, book number 2 of Gods and Elves, another New Jersey person who is out there today battling the storm, and we'll talk to him once again on November 12th. Also, I have to plug MagicPenWebDesign.com offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. Magic Pen Web Design promises that your website will be simple in content and easy to navigate while also delivering an eye-effective pop design. They will attract an interest to the books you write along with the other products or services that you offer. Magic Pen Web Design promises to work with you and to explore an option package that will be the most affordable for you. So go over there and fill out a free estimate form over at MagicPenWebDesign.com and let Magic Pen help you to sell that next book with a website design that works its magic for you. Caller instructions for today, when Mick gets on here at about quarter after the hour, you'll be able to give us a call at 626-213-5613 or toll free at 877-878-1436. And now, without further ado, I'd like to introduce my lovely, talented, and weather-soaked Robin Eduardo.
Weather soaked. Live from the epicenter of Hurricane Sandy.
Yes.
I'm doing okay. I'm sitting in the dark, though, with a candle and my cell phone because I have no electricity. and it's really, really bad outside.
I was saying that this would be a great writing exercise. Of course, you know, this is not all fun and games. It's very serious business. A lot of people could lose their lives over this and be injured. So we're asking everybody to please be safe. I know Robin has been safe. She has taken some pictures. But I was going to say, Robin, that, you know, us writers would love the experience, at least, in a safe place to sit down and to write about such a storm. And I was thinking of all the things that you could do to prepare yourself. And I guess some of the things you'd be paying attention to when you write a, you know, any kind of a story about a hurricane would be you want to put your senses to work. And I guess it would be the see, hear, smell, and feel of what's going on. So maybe you could take us through that right now and tell us what you see, what you hear. I don't know if you're smelling anything, but tell us what you feel, too.
Okay. Ooh, there's banging noises. Well, I have a greenhouse, and the glass keeps flexing, and I did hear glass crashing before, so I think I might have lost a couple of panes at least. The wind is whistling and really, I can't even think of the words to describe it because it's a mess out there. I'm just waiting for something to come crashing through my windows at any time.
Did you board up?
Have
you boarded
no,
up?
No, I didn't board anything up. I'm just staying away from the windows. I'll tell you what, though. I did, over the weekend, we stocked up on lots of bottled water. I have firewood for my fireplace, so in case the power does stay down, we can at least have some heat because it is cold. You know, it's not summertime. We're going into winter now, so we do have a source of heat. And, I mean, if worse comes to worse, I could cook in the fireplace, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I did buy non-perishable foods, things to make sandwiches and that sort. And like I said, we have bottled water. We have candles, batteries for the flashlight. But it's really crazy out there right now. Trees have already fallen on people's houses. They had reports on the radio about that. There's things flying through the air. It's nuts. I can't even really put everything into words at this moment. I guess for some people it's very scary. For me, it's kind of an exhilarating thing because I like this stuff.
You're sick. You're a sick woman.
I am a sick woman.
Well, as long as you're safe, that's all that matters. That's all we care about.
Well, I'm up on a hill, so I don't have to worry about the flooding. I'm pretty much landlocked now. Everywhere surrounding me is flooded out. So even if I did want to leave, it's kind of too late for that now. But I am, even my basement, if we had to go down into the basement for some safety, for safety reasons, even my basement would be dry because the basement itself is up on the hill.
Right.
Way above waterline, and we should be good. But I do feel sorry for my neighbors because there's a lot of people out there that are struggling through this.
Yeah.
So,
how far away from the ocean front are you, Robin?
About a block.
Wow.
Yeah. I could look out my daughter's bedroom window upstairs and see the water from her room. So, I'm about a block away from the water.
Some pretty good surging high waves there. They were talking some of them 10, 15 feet or higher.
Yeah. It's crazy. And, people like to go out and surf in this weather, believe it or not. So.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anybody out there right now, but obviously, people are nuts. And my husband and I did, like you mentioned, the photos that I put up on Facebook earlier. We did drive around while it was still basically just heavy rain, but not really, the wind hadn't really picked up. So we were able to get some pics. But it's funny because even while we were out driving around and it didn't seem that windy, I mean, you saw the one photo that I had with the pole that was about to fall down.
Yeah, that was serious.
I don't know how that happened, but, you know, it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, I would imagine that could probably be, you know, I'm only speculating here, but maybe the ground has gotten so saturated with the water that
it's
the pole is leaning. I don't know if a wind could blow the pole, especially since the winds weren't, I think, probably much over 40 or 50 mile per hour gusts at the time you took those pictures. So I can't see that happening. So it might have something to do with the soil and the ground around the pole. So
yeah, possibly.
Yeah,
because those photos are from this morning, and I can tell you it was not high tide. High tide is actually tonight. At the time that I took those photos, that was just from the storm surge naturally raising the level of the seawater. You know, the water level was raised quite high. So I do believe that the ground was very soaked. And the majority of those photos were in Perth Amboy, which that particular section of the town is at sea level. So, yeah.
Yeah, I believe you're at, believe it or not, I believe now is when you're at high tide. They said 8 p.m. So you should be experiencing.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right. I lost track of time. I have no electricity.
You know, that's interesting
no
in itself. A lot of people are going to be going without electricity for days, and it sort of takes us back to the roots of civilization in this country, if you will. To actually be without electricity can be quite a harrowing experience. You know, obviously you want to prepare yourself, but I guess it'll give you a taste of what it's like to live in that kind of ancient civilization or that colony type of civilization that we lived in back when this country started, when we didn't have electricity.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, you know me and my desire to build my off-grid cabin.
Yeah.
This is nothing.
Yeah, so everybody that's been on the internet is going to have to hold off unless I'm sure that the smartphone still works so they can still do a lot of the social media. And they're actually saying that the social media is better than using phones now during storms
mm-hmm.
like this. And it takes off the, you know, the overflow of all the calls and everything. But anyway, I hope you're safe and we'll continue on with the show. I know earlier we had a problem with you. On the cell, we lost your cell. We were thinking maybe it was a cell tower going down, but we'll continue
on.
Yeah,
my signal definitely is very spotty, and I'll try to stay on the line as best as I can. Obviously, I have no power over that, but if I lose contact, I'll try to call back in. So,
yep.
And if I don't come back in, then you know that I don't know, send out the troops. I don't know.
I'm sure you'll be fine.
No, I'm fine. I'm fine.
Yeah. You know, what I'd like to talk about now is something that just happened briefly, and then we'll get into the interview with Mick. I still have not heard from him. He's calling from Canada. Hopefully he'll be on shortly. If, Mick, you are hearing us out there on the internet, then go ahead and give us a call in now, and we'll wait for your call here. But what I'd like to say is that we've opened up the session for December through March, Robin, and we've gotten a whole hurricane full of people here. So they've been kind of flowing in here at high tide, if you will. We've got over a dozen people already who have already come into the email just today and submitted their work. So we've only got 8 spots. So I'm going to have to go through this, and we're going to have to decide, you know, of all these authors who we're going to bring on and all the books. And even, as I said, even if I can't get to you in an interview, I'm going to try and give you a review. I can't promise because I get so many requests that I really try to keep it just to the ones that are being interviewed on the show. But there will be a time, I think, here in the not-too-distant future where I will be opening up something for you people out there if you're interested in reviewing books, where I will be able to pay you, not a lot of money, but I will be able to pay you a little bit of money to do the reviews for me, maybe something like, I don't know, $20 a month or something like that. I haven't really figured it out yet, but we're going to go with that for right now. But thank everybody for sending in your request, and keep them coming because we will be going through all of them. And my guess is that we'll probably keep it open for a couple of days. So anyway, I still have not heard from Mick. Still waiting for the switchboard to light up here with him. Hopefully,
I hope he comes in.
in a storm. Like I say, we've never had it happen before where we went without a guest on the show, and hopefully he is attempting to call in. But for the time being, let me just go and read you the commentary to today's show, starting off with what Amazon has to say. And The Nightcrawler was written by Mick Ridgewell and published by Samhain Publishing in 2012. You may purchase it at Amazon.com/Kindle, and you can visit the author on Facebook. This is what Amazon has to say about his book. Wherever you run, he's waiting for you. Scott Randall is a corporate VP on top of the world. To celebrate a massive new deal, he's going to drive from Detroit to L.A. But before he leaves, he makes a bad mistake. He cruelly dismisses a homeless panhandler in the street. Along the road, he swears he sees the panhandler again, then again, and again. Soon he sees the man who calls himself the Nightcrawler, even in his dreams. No matter how frantically he tries, Scott can't escape his relentless pursuer. He thought he was going to L.A., but the Nightcrawler has a very different destination in mind. That's what Amazon, that's what Amazon had to say, and this is what I have to say about his book. The story's title gave me a little Halloween shiver and made me squirm like the slimy, crawly mass of worms, which permeates and invades Scott Randall's existence. The story moved along with slow anticipation, teasing me as I waited for the scary to come. The Nightcrawler character made a few early appearances, just as I found myself desperately wanting and needing for the creepy fear to slither over me sooner and a lot more often. But eventually, my wish was granted. My spookiness was ultimately satisfied. The author crafted some good early descriptive, interesting storylines, which led up to the much-anticipated encounter with a gooey and creepy main character. The story element of suspense is well-placed, and there was a good surge of excitement at the end. I see the author as having the right storytelling tools to improve his writing, and I look forward to his next book. And with that, looks like we do have him here on the line. And with that, I will bring on to the show Mick Ridgewell, I believe, all the way from Canada, up north of where we're at and north of where Robin's at. Hi, Mick.
Hi, Tom. Robin. Actually, if you look at the map, I think you'll find that I'm south of both of you.
You're what?
South of both of you.
Oh, you are. How can you be south? Aren't you in Canada?
Yes, but the part of Canada I'm at is directly south of Detroit, Michigan.
Oh.
Figure that one out.
Oh, I'll have to look at the map and see how that figures in.
Definitely south of Minnesota.
Yeah, I imagine you're not dealing with what Robin's dealing with right now in New Jersey. And I think, Robin, you're still there, right?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you haven't blown away yet, yes.
Okay, because it's breaking up on my end, so.
Okay.
Well, Sandy is causing us some miserable weather, but nothing like Robin's dealing with. We've got wind and rain, but it has reached the Great Lakes. It's a big storm system.
It sure is. So, Mick, I really enjoyed your book, and we're wondering here, could you read an excerpt from your book?
I can.
To get started.
The part I've chosen is just when Scott Randall, the main character, is checking out of his hotel on his second day of his road trip. And he's seen a bunch of worms crawling around after rain on the parking lot. So I'll begin now. The crow flipped its head back, and a worm disappeared down its throat. Then Scott noticed a shadow beneath a tree on the lawn about 20 yards from the Best Western sign. The shadow was moving. He squinted hard, trying to focus on the shadow. What the hell is that? The sound of his own voice gave him a start. He took a step toward the crow, trying to make out what the moving shadow. Holy shit! 2 steps closer, the ground was moving. It wasn't a shadow moving, it was the ground. Dark, brown, wet soil moving in a wave like a mudslide after a heavy rain on a deforested hillside. The wave moved over the crow, engulfing it. The mud seemed to collect on the crow. The pile was getting taller and taller, but it didn't advance onto the parking lot. It was 4 feet high as Scott stepped closer. His curiosity temporarily overwhelmed his fear. He had to figure out how mud could form a pile on its own. He was in horror when he realized it wasn't mud. It was worms, thousands of thick brown nightcrawlers squirming high atop a now buried crow. The pile grew over 5 feet tall, then began to ooze and gyrate, making a hideous, wet, sticky sound. It continued to get taller and thinner and formed into the shape of a man. Scott wanted to run, needed to run, run as fast as he could, but his legs were paralyzed with terror. The worms were pulled tighter, and the shape began to look familiar. It was him, the bum from Detroit. The yellow light from the Best Western sign and the orange sunlight cresting the horizon behind the building gave the abomination a devilish color. A slimy, reddish arm extended and cocked a finger like a gun, pointing at Scott. Like a gawker passing a car wreck, Scott found he was unable to avert his eyes. He wanted to look away. He wanted to turn and run. But he stood immobile and stared right at it. A sound came from deep inside the thing. The same clicking sound, and the worms fell into a puddle on the grass. The crow emerged from the pile, picked up a 6-inch nightcrawler, and flew off, cawing repeatedly, almost as if it were laughing. As if it were laughing at Scott.
Very good. This is your first book, and I have to ask you, as everybody does, an author such as Stephen King, they always ask, where did you come up with the idea, and how long did it take you to write the book?
Well, the idea from this actually came from Stephen King. I had picked up a copy of his On Writing, and while reading that, he described how he came up with the idea for a Buick 8. And while reading that idea, it gave me the idea of a person driving cross country and seeing the same person over and over and over again. And I took that idea and turned it into this book. It took me about 2 years to write it, 6 years to find somebody to publish it.
I think it's interesting, that concept, because you would normally not see, if it was a normal person, an everyday person who had access to an automobile or other transportation, you might see that person in another section of the country where you're traveling to. But like you point out, this person was homeless. So that's in itself very freaky and very unsettling if you were to experience that. So applaud you on that. I think that's really great.
Thanks. Robin. That was actually why I chose it to be a homeless person, because obviously they can't make their way across country, at least not at the speed of somebody who has his own car. So I thought that would add a little bit of creepiness to it.
It was good.
Thank you.
Robin, you got any questions or comments?
I just think it's pretty funny, and I don't mean like funny ha-ha, but kind of funny weird that we all kind of have Stephen King on the brain, because I actually commented earlier to somebody, a friend that was checking in on me, and they were asking me about the storm, and I said, well, it's walking and talking out there, and I believe that's a quote for this. We all kind of have this affinity for Stephen King, so that's cool.
Well, I spent the last bunch of years reading Stephen King's novels in order of publication, so I know what you're talking about.
And I'm sure in a storm such as what's pelting you now, Robin, there are going to be a lot of writers that are sitting down either now or after the storm and about ready to pen a story regarding the spookiness and darkness, if you will, of a storm such as what you're experiencing. So it's got to be quite the experience to do that, to actually sit and probably write, actually, instead of using a typewriter or a computer, you'd be actually sitting at candlelight, which I think would kind of add to the atmosphere, and I think that that's pretty cool. But anyway, Mick, in your book, you used a homeless person to support the Nightcrawler, as we just talked about. Mm-hmm. Are there any real-life experiences in this regard to pull you from writing your book?
Not a lot. I used to spend a lot of business trips in Toronto, and when I'm on the road, I hate sitting in hotels, so I'd go for walks all the time. And there are a lot of homeless people in pretty much every big city across the world, and Toronto's no exception. So that'd be pretty much my experience with homeless. I live in a fairly small community, and we don't have them here, at least not that I'm aware of.
Yeah. Robin?
Hello?
Okay. You're still here.
Yeah, just want to make sure you're still
there.
You're still there.
On my end, the phone keeps breaking up. I'm so sorry. Yeah, that's pretty interesting that you would draw from sort of a real-life experience, and, well, not so much involving your own personal experience, but as a part of writing, to draw from personal experience and be inspired by those sorts of things to I can't even think of the words. I'm at a loss. This storm is knocking me out. you know, to be able to be inspired by things that you observe in real life and use that in your writing, is what I meant to say. And certainly to be inspired by Stephen King's *A Buick Gate*. That's really cool. I think that's pretty interesting. And then your use of homeless people, or a homeless person. I always find human interest stories always to be a good thing to go with, because people can relate to those sorts of situations. So that's pretty interesting.
And a lot of people find homeless people creepy, which works out good for a horror story.
Well, I was homeless once, and I don't consider myself creepy, but
but people do have that type of a stereotype in their mind, that they're fearful of homeless people, and not necessarily for any rational reason. You know, they just let their imaginations run wild. So.
I think the fear is, correct me if I'm wrong here, Mick, in your interpretation of being homeless, but I think the fear is, and especially with your character, is a lot like, you know, you don't want to become that person. So we tend to move away from things that we don't want to become, or we're afraid that we might become. I think you see that a lot in today's world. I hate to use the example here, but the only thing that comes to my mind is the homophobia. You know, a lot of people that are homophobic are afraid of homeless, or not homeless people, but of gay people, because they're afraid that they may have some tendencies that would be, gay also. So they tend to move away from that, and it scares them. And of course, with Scott here in the story, he being a corporate person, I can see where he would want to not associate or move away from that kind of a lifestyle.
Scott's got a very very superior attitude, not just for homeless, but he feels he is above most people. So
yeah,
that much further removed from the homeless set.
Yeah, Mick, what I also found in The Nightcrawler, you had two separate storylines with two separate characters. Not only did you have Scott, but you had another character, and you eventually wove them together and brought them together.
Yep.
How much of a challenge was that for you? I know that a lot of writers have a difficult time in bringing two subplots to a story and tie them together. How they do it and when they do it is important.
Well, it was a tricky thing to do. The biggest challenge was keeping their timelines harmonized. Scott obviously is the lead story, but I also had to keep Roger's timeline even with Scott, so that they both ended up in the right place at the right time at the end of the book.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Roger.
Roger's a college student who's hitchhiking his way from Vermont to the Grand Canyon. That's been his goal in life, was to see the Grand Canyon, and he set out all by himself hitchhiking from Vermont, and he has a pretty good trip right up to the point where he meets up with Scott.
Yeah, that's really neat. This is a horror story, and this is a good time for it, because in a couple days we have Halloween coming up.
Yes, we do.
It's a horror story on so many different levels, as it also affects human nature, of course, and how we choose to treat people, as we just alluded to. Did anything in the story haunt you or keep you up at night? I know sometimes when I'm in my writing mode, as I've just gotten back into, I find myself going through the storyline in my head as I lay myself down to go to sleep, and that usually puts me to sleep. But if you're writing a story that has horror involved, I imagine that could probably be a bit of a unsettling kind of thing when you're trying to fall asleep at night, or you may even dream of. Did you have any fears or dreams or anything like that that would come up?
Not really. I can just put the story away when I go to bed. I did have a couple of readers who, one who mentioned that they can never listen to the phrase "okie dokie" the same again ever. and there was one of my coworkers went on a trip to Toronto shortly after reading it, and found herself handing out dollar coins to the homeless while she was there. So it has affected some people. To me, I not so much.
It affected her positively. To see somebody in a different light and give them coins, and hopefully they're not going to go okie dokie and make that clicking noise.
Mm-hmm. That might keep you awake.
Yeah, that would probably keep me awake if I kept hearing that. Yes, it would.
It did,
Robin?
Did we lose her?
No, she's still on the line here. I see her. Robin, you still there? Okay, I guess we may have lost her, but she's still showing up as being on here, but we'll get back to her in a little bit here. If you'd like to call us here at the Writer's Lounge, you can do that at 626-213-5613 or toll-free at 877-878-1436. And if you've got a question or comment for Mick, he would be happy to take them, and hopefully we will hear from you. Once again, I'd like to wish everybody a happy Halloween out there. Hope you're all enjoying yourself, and if you're in the storm, I hope you're taking safety precautions, as I hope Robin is. And Mick, getting back to your writing, where do you do your writing, and do you use anything to get you in the mood? I use music when I write, so I was wondering how you start that process.
We have a home office, and I pretty much sit in here. I don't write on a laptop. I write on a desktop computer, so I have to sit where the computer is. As far as getting in the mood, pretty much I just sit down and open up, read over where I was when I left off, and decide where I'm going to go next.
Uh-huh.
I don't play music, or sometimes when I'm stuck, I'll open up a game of Free Cell and try and restart my brain that way.
There you go. I mean, I do the same thing. I have an office here, and I sit here, and I'll do my writing in here. I like music when I write, But sometimes I will take a break and go on Facebook or whatever, and it's so easy nowadays to get tied up with that. And then also, like yourself, maybe play a game on the smartphone or whatever. But I find that the place that you're in can either help your writing or hinder your writing. I know a lot of people like people around. They might go off to a corner in a coffee shop somewhere and sit down and write. Some people use a computer. Other people do it the old-fashioned way, which is probably a lot like what a lot of people out on the East Coast would be doing right about now, possibly, sitting down and taking pen to paper. But I always found that interesting, and on the show we've asked our authors that question fairly regularly, and it's interesting. Most people, I think, that have been on the show are like you and I. They have a special place that they go to write.
Yeah, I've heard of people going off to coffee shops and things like that. I'm not sure that I could do that. I think it would be too distracting for me to have people moving in or moving around, and be worth giving it a try, though, I think, sometime.
I guess maybe, I was just thinking about this, but to actually go and sit in a coffee shop to get material for a story would be kind of fun. To go and recognize a person that's there and try to figure out what their lives are all about, or possibly, like with your story, go to the city and sit outside on a bench and watch a homeless person and kind of wonder what they're thinking, what their lives were like, what their lives are going to be like. I think that would be quite a really cool exercise to engage in.
I know what you mean.
Do you, getting back once again to the writing part of it, do you primarily control the characters in your book, or did they control you and where they wanted the story to go? And I guess I would probably look at the most dominant character in your story, which would be Scott and the homeless person. Did you find any of those two characters controlling?
With me, the way I write, there really isn't any control. I don't make a plan. I've heard of writers that say they sit down and they plan their book out chapter by chapter by chapter before they even write a word. For me, I just sit down and let the story unfold and see where it's going to take me.
Right inside your mind, and let the characters take over, pretty much, right?
Yep. Usually somewhere early on in the story, I come up with where I think the ending is going to be, and once I figure out the end, then it's just a matter of trying to get the characters there alive.
Right, there you go.
And they don't always do that.
Did anything surprise you in the story, where they went, where you weren't expecting them to go?
Well, I knew where I was going. There were times when I made up places. Some of the towns, some of the landmarks were actual places, and some of them there's one town called Forest Glen, Indiana, where Scott spent a night. That completely exists only in my mind and
okay.
On the pages of the Nightcrawler. And then there's a zoo that is inhabited by dinosaurs or something like that, made out of car parts. That's an actual place somewhere I think it's in Utah or somewhere out west someplace. I can't recall now. But, yeah, I went online and looked for points of interest between Nebraska and Arizona, and I came up with that, and I thought, oh, I got to put that in there.
Interesting nowadays where you could go online, go to Google Maps, and go to Street View. Did you ever try that?
I didn't do any Street View. When I wrote this, it was there was no such thing as Street View, so... I started writing this 8 years ago.
Oh, okay. I guess that was a question I didn't get to. That's interesting.
So, yeah, it took me 2 years to write it and 6 years to find a publisher. So it was about 8 years ago that I actually began writing The Nightcrawler.
Can you tell us a little bit about that publishing process and the marketing challenges that you may have encountered?
Well, I found that being a new writer is like being 18 years old all over again. When you're 18, you want to get out there and get a job, and nobody wants you because you have no experience, and you can't get any experience without the job.
Yeah.
I found that with publishing, if you don't have an agent, you can't get into the publishers, and if you don't have any publishing experience, you can't get an agent. So
right.
That was the biggest challenge, was trying to find somebody to read the manuscript without having an agent behind me.
And I know today, and of course, if Robin was with us and looks like she has disappeared, she would promote self-publishing. I know a lot of authors, in fact, our next author coming up on the show, the next show here, Brian Anderson, went that route, and now he is selling like hotcakes. I mean, he is now in a position where he doesn't even have to work a job. He is selling, what is it, last time I talked to him, he was telling me he was selling 70 to 80 books a day.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So that is, and it's a lot of hard work. It can be done. We encourage all of our authors to get out there and to push your work and to get involved and do what you need to do to get people interested in what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I know that publishing and getting an agent can also be a challenge at times, and it can be rather a tedious, slow process, because sometimes a publisher, or especially an agent, has other people that they're working for, and you sort of get bogged down in that line of waiting and waiting for them to do whatever they're going to do with your book. So it can be very frustrating these days, especially for a new writer who has come on. Many of them, as I said, have been on the Writer's Lounge and have expressed those frustrations. So it's great that you were able to get, you know, the publisher and the aid. Did you say you had an agent? You do have
nope.
an agent?
No agent.
No agent. Okay.
No agent. And the people at Sam Ain Publishing have been just the best to work with. I can't say enough good things about the treatment that I've got from them so far.
Well, that's good. When you're not writing, what do you like doing in your life? What inspires you to write?
Well, when I'm not writing, I'm usually either at work or doing stuff to keep my house going.
Okay.
I get to work at about 7:30 in the morning and get home around 5 o'clock. And then we writers have the same things going on in their house that everybody else has to do. So
we all have normal lives, right?
That's right. I try to get some reading done, but I haven't been too successful at that lately. I'm on a deadline for my next novel, so my reading time has definitely diminished lately. I do enjoy watching TV. Currently, Dexter and The Walking Dead are my two must-see TV shows, which currently are conflicting with each other. So that's making things a challenge. I like movies, but it's been a while since I've seen a movie. I've gone out to see one, anyways.
Yeah. You know, that's sometimes fuel for us writers to go actually sit in the movie and sometimes envision your own story up on the screen. I do that quite often. When you, Mick, when you decided to be a writer, how did your friends and family react, and have you met your expectations? Not that you're doing it full-time. You just explained that you do have a full-time job like many of us do, but
right.
I imagine when people ask you what you do, imagine at some point you do say you're a writer, and what kind of reaction do you get?
I read a book once that said, don't tell anybody that you're writing until you get it, at least get close to getting it published, because then you've got to constantly answer that question. So how's the book going? Any news on publishing? However, you can't really hide it from your family. Eventually, they're going to wonder why you're spending so much time at your computer.
Yes.
I think I was about maybe 10,000 words into the Nightcrawler when I told my wife that I was going to try and write a book. And she's been my number one fan ever since I started. She's been very supportive. She's gone to a couple of horror conferences with me, and she is not a horror fan by any stretch.
Yeah.
She's gone to help me out with some book signings. In fact, there's a local youth center that does an annual haunted house, and I've been out there the last 2 weekends signing books at their haunted house, and my wife has been standing out there in the chill. We've been inside, but we're right next to the door, and so you got the cold air coming in, and she's been great.
Cool. And you'd mentioned that you were working on a new project. Can you tell
yep.
us about that?
I'm currently writing a new vampire novel. It's a vampire novel where the vampires are monsters. These vampires are not going to be seen in any high schools, at least not unless they're having dinner. I like to call it a cross between Bram Stoker's Dracula and 30 Days of Night.
Oh.
These are nasty creatures that have no human feelings at all.
When do you expect to be done with this?
Well, I'm due to hand it in to Don Daria at Samhain Publishing in January, and he's holding a tentative spot for me for November of 2013, assuming that it meets his expectations.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like something to look forward to. And has the sales of the Nightcrawler, have they been what you expected?
Well, I went into it not expecting to sell a lot of books because I have spent a lot of time researching and new authors, people are not, they don't know who I am, so they're not gone out there looking for my books. So I didn't go out there expecting to sell tens of thousands of books. However, there's some out there, and hopefully the people that are reading it are telling their friends hopefully good things will happen.
Of course, you know, get those reviews and go, you know, shop around for reviews, get people to review. I reviewed your book. There's others
yep.
that review. That's a very big part of getting your book sold.
Yeah.
Because people, obviously, before they buy, they usually, most times, will look at the reviews. And if they're seeing a one or a two, they usually never will buy the book. So it's good to get yourself out there and you know, get those reviews, and that's very important, I think. Mac,
yep, I've managed to hit all the local media. I've got some time on the local radio and
cool.
a couple of magazines here, so and a couple of newspapers,
uh-huh.
and hopefully I can spread that out farther. And I've got. A couple of reviews going. I got yours and one going in Ohio from a blogger in Ohio. And I'm waiting on a review from Rue Morgue magazine. So things are happening slowly.
So tell us a little bit about what you do to get on a radio show other than an online radio show such as this one. What's the process involved and how do you go about it?
Well, there's a local morning show that I did here, and basically I just wrote down some notes that have been common questions that I've gotten from the newspaper guys, the magazine guys, and I made some notes down, and that seemed to work. I did basically work from a set of notes while I was talking on the radio. However, on the morning radio, you don't have an hour to talk. You got to get your blurb in 2 or 3 minutes. And
yeah. Yeah, that's so the only problem. You really can't delve in. Although I do know a local radio guy here who interviews authors on his show, and he goes about the same amount of time that I do usually within the hour, 40 to 45 minutes. And I think when you're interviewing an author, I think you need that amount of time because a lot of people take an interest in the personality of a writer, not just the story itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes when people read reviews online or even in the papers, they fail to get to know the author. And if they got to know the author a little bit more,
yep,
I think they're more apt to buy the book. And that's been my experience.
Yep. I think that's one of the things that makes personal appearances and readings effective.
Yes.
With Q&A afterwards.
Yes. And then, of course, you know, just the aspect of saying, hey, I met this guy, or I met Stephen King, or I met, you know, whoever else. Here would be a gentleman who wrote Cork O'Connor series. His name escapes me right now. It's what happens when you get older. But, yeah, it's good to actually meet up with somebody, and I hope the show works that way for you also, where people that are listening can listen in and, you know, hear you talk and about your life and your writing. And, of course, once again, folks, if you want to give us a call, we have a few minutes left here. You can give us a call at 626-213-5613 or toll-free at 877-878-1436. And, Mick, what I'd like to ask, and we were just talking about, you know, getting to know writers and getting to know people that we interact with, if you could sit down and talk with a famous writer, who would it be, and what would be the first question you would ask them?
Well, that would have to be Stephen King.
Ah, I was hoping you were going to say that. Let me set this up for you,
sure,
as I usually do on the show. You're led down a hallway, and there's a door. And the person directs you to the door and tells you to go inside the room. So you enter this room, and it's fairly dark in there. It's backlit a little bit. But in the center of the room, there's a table, and there's a gentleman sitting at the table. And in your case, this gentleman would be Stephen King. What would be the first thing that you would say to him as you approached him?
Well, I'd be tempted to ask him what happened at the end of It.
Okay.
Because that, to me, was one of his best books ever, right up until the end. But I'm not sure if I'd have the nerve to ask him that.
So it would be, see, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't that The Spider?
The Spider and the Flying Turtle?
Yeah, and it seemed to be kind of off kilter of the rest of the story. Is that
the rest of the story was, yeah, the rest of the story was great, and that just, it didn't, to me, it didn't flow. But I'm not sure if I'd say, hey, Steve, I really didn't like the end of It. Another thought would be, would you mind endorsing The Nightcrawler?
Okay.
That could work for me.
Uh-huh.
But seriously, I think one of the things that I might say is The Nightcrawler basically turned into the – have you read On Writing?
Yes. In fact, our last author on 2 weeks ago was also talking about that book quite a bit.
Yeah, well,
and
he's
I
got
also
the,
have a copy of that book.
Well, he's got, you know, his assignment in there. He's got an assignment in there. And The Nightcrawler basically turned into that assignment. And I wouldn't mind asking him, hey, Steve, this is my On Writing assignment. How did I do?
And so you would ask him to read your book, obviously.
I sent a request into his website, but they said, well, you got to send it to the office, send a letter to the office, and send him a book, and he gets stacks of them, and he may read it or he may not. So.
Yeah, but it
would
be a little bit unsettling, unnerving a little bit for him to read something that I'd write. I'd be worried about what he might say. I know a lot of people over the course of the year that I've been doing my reviews, they have called me honest, they've called me interesting, they've called me a good writer, they've also called me Simon Cowell. So, you know, and I usually give everybody the honest opinion about their work, and I, you know, I never want to push a writer away. If they're really bad, I think I would just say, look, you need to work on this and come back at a later time. Very few people have I ever turned away in the last year, which I thought I would do a lot more of. So I imagine it would probably be a lot like that with somebody like a Stephen King. I would hope that he wouldn't say, you know, gee, your story sucks, and, you know, don't quit your day job.
Well, he's spent enough time entertaining me, so I'd be more than happy to entertain him for 8 or 10 hours or whatever it would take him to read the Nightcrawler.
Yeah, and I do know that speaking of, you know, being dissatisfied with our work when we write it, he wrote Carrie, and that ended up in the trash can. I don't
right.
know if you read
yeah.
if you know that story, and then his
yep.
wife retrieved it, and there you go. I always relate back to that when I'm thinking that I'm not doing a very good job with my writing, although I've only written a memoir, and I'm working now on a novel. But sometimes you get discouraged, and sometimes you just want to toss it in the can, and other times you just kind of pull back and say, no, I'm gonna finish this, and I'm gonna put it out there like you would if you're pushing your kid out the door on their 21st birthday into the new world. So
right.
that's, I think, important, and it's very hard for a lot of writers to do that. And I applaud you for taking that step. And it took you, again, once again, you had said it took you 8 years to get to the point of actually publishing it?
That's correct.
So did you have a lot of hesitation, or was it just that you just didn't get it done because of everything else going on in your life?
Well, after the 2 years of writing it and editing and reviewing, I started sending it out to Canadian publishers in the beginning that accepted unsolicited manuscripts. And once I got all my nicely worded form letters back from the Canadian publishers, then I started sending it to the U.S. And then I happened on a copy of Writer's Digest, and they were talking about Aphonomy.com. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's a writer's community that's administered by HarperCollins UK.
Yes.
And after I spent 11 months on there promoting the Nightcrawler and eventually got it into the top 5 position, and once you get there, you're given a review by a HarperCollins editor. And they had a lot of good things to say about it, about the book. They didn't offer me a contract for it, but they had a lot of good comments. And so that was encouraging. I took some of their comments and did another round of edits, and that was the copy that Don Doria signed.
Very good. Well, we're at the end of our interview here. Mick, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Where can people find you on the Internet?
They can find me on Facebook, Mick Ridgewell on Facebook, Twitter, at Mick Ridgewell, no space in there, just at Mick Ridgewell. And they can send me an email. I'd love to hear from them. It's Mick Ridgewell, all one word, at yahoo.ca.
Cool. Very good. And thank you for coming on the show. And I'll have to check with Robin, make sure she's okay. And good luck with your writing in the future, Mick. And keep listening to the Writer's Lounge.
Thanks, Tom.
Take care now.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Yep, bye. Okay, folks, it's another show completed, and next time around we will have on Brian D. Anderson and the Godling Chronicles book number 2 of Gods and Elves, and we'll see you next time, as we normally say, on the Writer's Lounge. Good reading and good writing, and happy Halloween.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. to Noah one beautiful morn. He said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. Like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun begins. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather.